CliffCentral.com.
Oh, I'm so happy to see this guy. He has been described as someone who has an eclectic woolly style and sneakers, rocks a moustache, and furry fro like no other Afrikaans boykie we've ever seen. I don't know who said that, but I think it's complimentary.
A furry woolly style, yeah, like Woolworths. Like,
yeah, weird, huh? Let me tell you, he is one of the funniest people I've ever encountered. He's booked, he's busy, he's on stage at Kings and Queens of Comedy at the Durban ICC. Book now, February 16th. It's Skulk Besaidenhout. How are you, meneer?
Like I knew. I haven't seen you since the roast.
Yeah, that was, what, last year?
Like this time
October, November, was it this?
No, it was like April, May, around there.
How come I thought it was later in the year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was fun.
How did you find that? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
Yeah, I was annoyed that we started so late. I keep telling people that. It kind of put me off the whole thing because I was enjoying it up to when... It started at 10 o'clock.
That's comedians for you. Like, you get a 10-minute opening set, and then you start having fun. I think that's when it's over. When you start having fun, when it goes from, like, I've got a job to do to, like, now this is more for me than for you.
Yeah. It becomes a bit self-indulgent.
Yes, yes.
Well, I mean, it seems to have worked, and they're doing another one, I see.
Yeah, they're doing the rest of AKA. Yes.
Okay.
I think that'll
Are
be
Are you
good.
Involved in this one?
I might help write a few roasts, but I'm not on it, no.
All right, well, we'll see who's on the panel there, but it's nice to see you. So I didn't realize this. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we hear about comedians is their work, and with you, there's plenty of stuff to play with, but I didn't know that you were actually from Polokwane, among other things.
I was just born there. Jeez. I can't say I'm with there. I'm from there. But I don't know my way around Polokwane.
How do you straddle this really interesting divide between being, you know, like in the new breed of comedian and being like from
the old breed of Afrikaans?
Yeah, like a proper old Afrikaner, like Pieter Hendrik Skulk Besaidenhout. I mean, that doesn't sound like someone. I know Evita Besaidenhout's a made-up character, but there's no one else I've ever encountered with your surname in comedy. I'd expect you to be a farmer.
Yeah, I think it's kind of just like trying to play against stereotypes. Well, not actually play against it. I just am not that stereotype. I'm not like the big burly rugby player that is stereotypically, let's say, racist or conservative. Well, you know, this is not obviously the stereotype.
But, so you know, I'm struggling to find Afrikaans people like that, frankly. I don't think very many of them exist in this generation.
And they do surprise you, because I must admit, like, sometimes it's like, sometimes I find myself being the being the assumption maker. Mm-hmm. I'll see like a oom with like khakis and a coat in his sock. I mean a comb in his sock. Yeah. And then I'll just like assume this guy's a racist. And then you start speaking to this guy and he's like the most open-minded person you've ever seen. And then you speak
fluent
to
Zulu or whatever.
Yeah, and then you speak to like some guy who's got like a long fringe and skinny jeans, and you think like, this is the kind of guy I'll get along with. And then they drop the K-bomb, and you're like, by your look, I never... And then it just shows you can never like sort of put someone... This is what a racist looks like. This is what a liberal looks like.
Wasn't there that brilliant ad that they made not so long ago too? There was someone made an ad where they did exactly this, and they put a whole lot of people in a room, and then they made them challenge their stereotypes. And I think that that's probably a healthy thing to do, because in South Africa we've got into this habit now of using identity politics to put people in boxes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if you go into any place where people are actually successfully commingling, and not because they're being forced to.
Yes.
You see like a complete mix. I mean, I walked into the gym the other day, and it was in Pretoria, so there's already a stereotype you attach to that.
Yes.
This young white Afrikaans girl and her black boyfriend sitting doing like yoga.
Yeah.
And this is not something that, first of all, any self-respecting black man would have done 5 years ago. And it's also not something that you would expect to see an Afrikaans girl doing with a black man in a hot yoga class.
Yes.
And I do like that. I like that seeing that people are able now to break away from those stereotypes.
Yes.
And get away from all the crap that other people are putting onto them the whole time.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, because comedy is essentially like stereotyping.
Make a joke out of a stereotype.
You make a joke
That's
out,
where
of
it comes
a,
from.
Out of a stereotype. So, you know, the stereotypes I'd like to talk about is the stereotype of English people being mean to Afrikaans people, you know, like always teasing us.
But listen, I mean, Afrikaans people have a great sense of humor, and yeah. there's that kind of history in Afrikaans culture of story. Vertel.
Yeah.
You know, and Afrikaans people have a beautiful use of a language, and you use English and Afrikaans interchangeably.
Yes.
Which is interesting too.
Yeah.
Because you can draw on both, and I suppose for you it's like you have a bigger toolbox to play with then.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of, I have this new material about like the Anglo-Boer War, where in my Afrikaans show, I'll kind of like target, because often it happens in the Afrikaans shows where an English person that can understand Afrikaans fluently and they've got an Afrikaans boyfriend or girlfriend, and they come to the show. And then I do this thing where I kind of like talk through the Anglo-Boer War and how Afrikaans people were put in concentration camps and kind of put them on the spot and make them feel bad. But then at the end, there's like a big reveal and it's all fun. But anyway, so the other day in Cape Town, I was doing that joke and this like English oom stormed out. He was like so upset. But it was kind of funny because they draw curtain over the door. So he like storms out until he gets to the door. And then he's just like karfoofling here with a curtain, not knowing where the door is. And then I don't know, because it's so obvious. Now I'm staring at him, making this hoo-ha at the curtain. And the audience staring at him. And we all know he's upset. But I didn't want to just assume like, oh, okay, you're leaving because you're upset. So I was like, gaan oom gaan rook. And then he was like, don't you speak to me. And then he starts cucking out the audience for being there. And the audience are like,
because they're laughing at him.
Well, yeah, they're laughing at the jokes. Or they at the show, you know. And they're like, what did we do? We just came to watch a show. We're just here for a good night. And then he stormed out. And then But first he like confronted me. He shouted at me. He didn't give me a chance to speak. And then he cucked out the audience for listening to me and whatever.
He know what comedy's all about?
Well, I mean, it was the first time I've experienced something like that. And then I turned to the audience because there were like quite a few English people there. And then I said, look, you know, I'm not like close to the idea that maybe it could be the material that is wrong. So, you know, is there someone else who feels this way? And then everyone was like, no, it's fine, carry on, you know.
Yeah, but that's brave, but at the same time, it's kind of sad that you have to do that with an audience, because you would assume, I mean, the logical, the reasonable assumption is people come there to be entertained, and you've got to have a little bit of there's an expectation that someone somewhere is going to crack a joke that you're not going to love every step of the way.
Yeah.
But you're mostly there to laugh, like you come with good intentions, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's no different than, like, putting a guy on the spot that's there with his girlfriend, they've been together for 10 years, and going, oh, when you're putting a ring on it, you know? Yeah. Like, you're also putting that guy on the spot and in an uncomfortable position, and, I mean,
but
yeah,
that's kind
that's
of
comedy.
What we want to see that stuff,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to deconstruct comedy at all, but there's this world around us now which seems kind of oppressive when it comes to this stuff. Especially because now the Oscars can't find anyone who's brave enough to host them, because if you upset anybody at the Oscars, it's what they call a microaggression. So anyone in the audience, if you crack a joke about Harvey Weinstein, which, you know, everybody realizes he's a creep, but if you crack a joke about it, there's some girl in the crowd who's going to be triggered. Or if you tell a race joke, then it's going to be about the Trump's America. And suddenly there's off-limits areas, and that's not great for comedy.
I mean, yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot, the way that, in a way, this whole woke movement is obviously very good, and it's good that people can't just say or do stuff anymore and just for it to be normalized.
I'm still trying to figure out if that's good or not.
But at the same time, I feel like it's kind of killing comedy a bit. Mm. And the trick is for comedians to, I mean, there's always been a fine line between just outright offensive and edgy.
Sure.
Just because it's edgy, just because it's like kind of testing the waters, it doesn't necessarily mean it's offensive. You can write a funny joke, an edgy joke about race without the joke being racist.
Yes, absolutely. But the fact that you have to think it through now. So
now you have to overthink it to such an extent that eventually you just lost the joke.
Yeah, because there's going to be some purple-haired feminist from UCT in the front row who's actually not come there to laugh. And she's come there to record you on her phone out of context and put it on the internet to show that you're a terrible misogynist.
That's
weird, right?
That's actually what I've been telling people in the show. I normally don't mind if people record in my show, because They put that on Instagram.
It's marketing for you.
Then there's 10 people that go, oh, that's quite funny. I'm going to go to the next show. But now I've been telling people, don't record out of context. Because if I, for example, say like, Mandela was cock lacquer, and you just cut out the lacquer. You stop the video before lacquer. Can you imagine the world of pain?
Absolutely.
That I will enter. And I mean, it's very easy to edit a video in that way.
And it comes from bad intentions.
Like, and then automatically I'll just sound guilty if I go, I said cock lacquer.
Yeah.
Then people are like, sure you said that.
But you're doing really well. I mean, Jesus, you are booked up to the nines. You seem to be doing sold out performances everywhere.
I wish it was sold out.
Isn't it sold out? I've heard very good things.
I lost a lot of money in Bloemfontein last year. Of all places, the place you think I would sell out.
Really? Did Bloem not work out?
No, it's just sometimes you just catch a dorpie or whatever just in the wrong month.
But do you have bad days? Like, I mean, all of us have a bad day.
Terrible days.
Well, you get up on stage and you're not list to be there. You're tired. You may be grumpy. You may be hungry.
I don't think I'm ever like not list to be on stage. I want to be on stage, but sometimes there's like a guy, like a really drunk guy in the crowd or whatever that I always walk on stage. I'm like, I'm not list now to finish the show. I'm list to now start cutting. Yeah. You know,
it's honest of you to say that, and I think the audience probably likes it. I mean, like yesterday I was doing this talk. I'm not a comedian, so I'm not a performer, but I was doing this talk, and then the guy says, any closing comments? And I said, nah, done.
Yeah.
So you don't need to gild the lily. You don't need to carry on forever.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just, it's not because I was bored. I was actually enjoying it, but, you know, sometimes like when something stops, it's the right time to stop it, and you've got to trust whoever's on the stage to do that.
Yes.
No matter how much you want more, because I often go to comedy shows and then I'll sit there and go, oh, I wish we'd got another 15 minutes, but maybe it was right.
Yeah.
Like you should leave wanting.
Because if that 15 minutes was disappointing, then that would have ruined the whole night.
That's it. All you would have remembered.
Last night, actually, I did a show at the Atterbury Theatre in Pretoria, and I walked off. I said goodnight. I walked off, and then I heard someone shout encore. And then I walked back on. And as soon as I walked back on, I was like, I don't know if this was the right decision. But it was an ego thing, because I've never done a show where someone shouted encore.
It's not normal in comedy.
People don't
normally do
that. I think more in the American comedians get that. Like, it's kind of like almost like when you watch the Rolling Stones, you know that they're going to come back for an encore. So in America, but I haven't really seen that much in South Africa. I mean, big names like Celeste and Tully.
Yeah.
The other night at Goliath Comedy Club, it was like the first encore ever there for her. And I walked out and I was like, what material am I going to do now? Because I didn't really have time to like really stand backstage and think it through. Then I was like, I ended on my strongest joke. I think so. I don't know.
That's impressive.
I don't know what I'm gonna do now after the strongest
joke. But you still went on.
I went on and then I was like, oh my word, what am I doing here? And then I was like, okay, the first big laugh you get, just run off the stage.
Get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
It's scary, man. People don't get how terrifying comedy is, because the audience is very unforgiving if you're not funny.
Yes.
You've seen people crash and burn, right? It's not the nicest thing in the world.
Mm.
It's very mean. Do you find that comedy's hard in South Africa now from a competitive point of view? Like, there are people, you mentioned Celeste and Tuli, there are these, and you're one of them, frankly. Like, you're at the top of your game. There are a lot of people like you who are doing really, really well. And then there's that kind of bubbling under category of people who are always trying to take your place.
I was in that bubbling under category for very long, where I was like sort of considering myself up and coming, but not quite yet. So I was like a newcomer, and then I was like the up and coming guy. And then I was there for a long time. And do you know what? Like, I think the South African comedy industry, more than any comedy industry in the world, is the most sort of supportive and tight-knit.
Look at how many comedians are successful in South Africa.
Yeah.
But how do you know when you've got out of bubbling under and into having made it?
I mean, I still don't know. I mean, there's times where you think you establish and you do a show and it's not like the biggest venue and it doesn't sell out and you're like, okay, cool, still got, you know, or where you sell out a show, but you've actually spent all the profit you've made on Facebook boosts just to get it full, you know.
Is that what you guys are doing now? Is are comedians spending on Facebook boosts?
Yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, I'm just curious how you market this stuff.
If you don't have like in the hundreds of thousands of followers, you need a means to reach like 10,000 people a day, and your own followers on Instagram also eventually get cut full of you posting the same show, especially if you punting a show that's in Pretoria and this guy's sitting in Stellenbosch and he's like, yeah, can I stop seeing this show in Pretoria? Like, I can't be there, okay? Yeah. You know, so... Where do you
really like performing? I mean, you mentioned that Bloom wasn't so hot this time, but where do you love going? You're doing this Durban ICC one, which is huge, obviously.
Is always lekker.
Is it? Because I've heard Durban people don't like to spend money.
One-man shows in Durban, I've sort of... don't really go there anymore.
Because they're a bit seinig.
I don't know if it's seinig or
maybe
if
they don't have enough money.
I don't think it's a money thing. I think it's just like you're so used to not leaving your house that when something does happen, you still don't leave the house. I promise this happens with
musicians as well. They can't get gigs in Durban because people aren't willing to go.
I did a Dorpie tour last year. I was like, I want to do the Dorpies. Then you go to a place like Valcom, and you'd expect everyone's going to be at the show.
Yeah, because what else is there to do?
Exactly.
Except drink and beat your wife and go around those traffic circles or church.
that's the mentality. But so then you're like, okay, well, they don't do it the whole year. So that's kind of like their default.
Oh.
And then if something does happen, they're like, oh, I'm just going to do what I did last night.
So they don't come.
They don't come.
But those little towns... Okay, now you've got...
I lost a lot of money in Valcom as well, by the way.
I don't think anyone's made money in Valcom since the gold rush stopped. But to be fair, I mean, a lot of these towns, they turn out for Steve Hofmeyr, right? And and I'm not going to besmirch Steve because I think it's too easy and people do it all the time. And I don't actually think he's that stupid if he's still making money, despite the fact that everyone who doesn't like him hates him. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like Steve goes around to these little towns like Betel and
Steve is a really clever businessman.
Sure. How come Steve can go to these little towns and make them part with their money and they buy his merchandise and like he's very smart about this and they don't come to comedy shows? Like what is it about that mentality or that kind of culture? Explain it and I'm not going to say nasty things about them despite your answer, however it might come out.
Yeah, I think, okay, if I can speak specifically about Steve and the kind of Afrikaans music, it's the nostalgia of it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's missing the good old days, and I'm not necessarily saying that every single person in the Steve concert is missing apartheid and that's why they're there. But it is that likeness.
They're missing Achter Elke Man, and they're missing the little town that they used to love, because now it's a cuck place.
Yeah. Now there's a pep.
Yeah, and it's dirty and
and you
have to marry your second cousin.
The government's letting them down and whatever. Okay. So I think
I said I wouldn't be mean and I just.
I think it's that nostalgia. Yeah.
But when you go to a town like that, do you have to curtail your act? Do you have to change it slightly? Do you have to?
No, I don't. Yeah.
Have you ever been threatened? Have you ever had someone say, "I'm gonna murder you"?
Yeah, I get it a lot on social media, and that pisses me off more than anything. Because out of the amount of threats I've received on social media, I'm like, surely I would have run into one of those people.
These are very weak people.
In the spa, you know. And, I would actually respect, even if it does end with you punching me in the face, I'd respect you more for walking up to me, saying whatever you upset with that I did, and then just punching me in the face. But like this whole thing of threatening to punch me in the face, and then I'm like, cool,
let's meet.
Yeah, I live in London.
None of them will ever come.
I live in London. Yeah. Come through or let's just sit down and you can tell me at least to my face like what a piece of shit you think I am.
Yeah.
And none of them will ever come, and that makes me angry.
I agree. It makes me angry too, because they're all big deal on social media. But when it comes to actually having integrity and saying what you're going to do and then doing it, none of them have the balls.
Yeah, I've never, like, except for that whim that walked out the other day.
Yeah, but he didn't know. He's probably not on social media.
Yeah, but I mean, I've never had like a proper confrontation. Oh. And I know there's a lot of people who don't like me and my comedy. But I've never had like a personal.
Well, I'm glad about that. I mean, I don't want to hear stories like that because I do think we've evolved slightly beyond actually hitting each other. What we need to evolve beyond now is threatening each other as well, because that's unnecessary. What kind of miserable existence do you have when you're going around abusing a comedian anonymously on Facebook? It's a dumb way to spend your time.
And it's not even anonymously, because on Facebook it's like your name and surname is there. What I try and do is I just screen grab those messages and share it.
Yeah.
And post them.
And then people laugh.
Yeah, and then people at least can laugh at what I'm getting. I think sometimes people like also they don't quite realize the kind of messages you get sometimes, and you just share that and they're like, wow, is that what you get?
For trying to make people laugh.
Yeah, and then you're like every day, and it's not really from my stand-up. We do this Afrikaans satire show. It's like basically best way to describe it is like an Afrikaans daily show on CakeNet, and it's satire, you know. And you can make fun of the EFF or the ANC or Zuma till the cows come home and the CakeNet audience is happy. As soon as you make a joke or criticize AfriForum for something they did, then all of a sudden you just get the threats come rolling in.
Yeah, we are so incapable of laughing at those things that we think are so important.
And just hypocrites.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I can't believe you called Dr. So-and-so this. Then I'm like, I called Jacob Zuma something much worse.
No, but they don't see it.
Yeah, but they don't, you know.
Don't want to see it.
Yeah, but that's lekker.
Do you like social media? I mean, do you find it's a useful tool besides marketing for your shows? Do you actually like being on there? I'm starting to like it less and less.
I mean, I like my own profile. I like curating my profile and putting effort into the captions, making the captions funny, trying to make the photos funny, trying to make funny Insta stories. Because at the end of the day, and I actually don't like marketing shows, because at the end of the day, people who like my Instagram account aren't there to... I mean, they want to know when the shows are, but they're not there to constantly be spammed by messages. So, you know, I'll go through 2 weeks where I'm like, yo, guys, I'm really sorry, but I have to sell these tickets. And then I'll spam them. And then I will try really hard just to be entertaining, because that's why they follow me. You know, that's why you follow a comedian to laugh.
Mm.
And, but I mean, scrolling on social media, I think I've pretty much written off Facebook.
Yeah.
Like looking at other people's
stuff. Sure, that went away a few years ago. Yeah.
Instagram, I mean, I'll scroll for 2 minutes and then realize why.
Who are you following on Instagram? I mean, like, is there any interesting stuff that you are following on Instagram?
Not interesting stuff, but let's...
Funny, crazy, stupid? I'm following this very, very big-titted woman called Allegra Cole. Okay, and I follow her because when you wake up in the morning, and you know most people, first thing you do is reach for your phone. And this woman has like unbelievable, this is outrageous, outrageous big tits. And I feel sorry for her in some way, but I try not to take it seriously. I objectify her because, not because I'm turned on by the big tits, because they're so outrageous. But it makes me laugh.
They're like caricature.
Yeah, like there's someone who wakes up in the morning and she's got just the biggest pair of tits you've ever seen. And she'll play the piano around her tits. And she'll do things that, like the rest of us do normal stuff, but because she's got these huge tits, she just looks ridiculous doing them. And it gives me joy. It makes me smile.
Let me tell you the first three. I've opened Instagram. These are the first three posts. Number one is a girl sitting fully clothed in a milky bath.
Okay.
So in a bath, but the bath is milk.
It's milk, yeah.
Number two is just a picture of, you know, like those adult coloring things.
The coloring in books for adults.
Those coloring books for adults. That's like, you know, all these patterns and stuff. But an empty one, so she hasn't even colored it in yet.
Great post.
I guess she's showing us, this is what I'm going to color in today. And then just a post that simply says, less is more.
So, have you been satisfied by those first three posts?
I mean, the milky bath, I was mildly satisfied by. But
you must follow Allegra Cole. It'll improve your life.
Please send me.
I'm going to subscribe you to her now. This is great. Did you really want to be a rugby player when you were little?
No, I never wanted to be a rugby. I never said I wanted to be a rugby player. I wanted to be in the team because I wanted to belong.
To be popular as well, yeah.
To be popular, that's the way to get there. Yeah, and just to be part of a team and just be able to do the thing. Just be able to say, yeah, I left it because I wanted to, not because I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
but it was the latter.
I felt so empowered on the day that I actually was honest with people about rugby and said that I don't care. Because it's very difficult in South Africa as a guy to admit that you don't give a shit about rugby. Because people look at you funny. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
What are you going to talk about at a braai? I'm really just not interested at all. And I used to put on a show. I'd be like, yeah, born in Pretoria. I've supported the Bulls my whole life. And I would know the names of some of the players. And, you know, I know what a forward pass is. And because I played rugby at school, also because I had to. But yes, I don't care. And when I eventually was just honest with people and said to them, I don't give a shit, the initial reaction was horror. But then after that, I'm like, yeah, let's have a real conversation.
I never knew the names of players. I never knew.
You didn't even try.
No. I remember my dad loves this story. Like, he picked me up from school and he was giving my friend a lift as well to his house. And then we were 9 years old. And then the friend said that we were asked in class that who's our hero? Everyone has to say their hero. So most kids, I remember, Mkhayantini was
Mkhayantini was a huge star.
He was that year. That was
late
90s, 2001.
Yeah.
And that like zebra, that like, remember that mascot that the cricket used to have? Like zebra. Like everyone had that soft toy and stuff. They were like giving it away at McDonald's as your Happy Meal thing. And almost everyone in the class in Mkhayantini, if it wasn't Mkhayantini, it was like, let's say Brighton Pulser, or I don't know if Brian Abana was playing rugby.
I think he was, yeah.
Brian Abana. And then eventually my dad said, so Skalky, what did you say? Who did you say your hero? I said, Casper de Vries.
Did he throw you out of the car?
I think the teacher almost fell over because, I mean, Casper's comedy is not something that a 9-year-old should really that stage. But my mom used to, like, take me scallopies to go watch Casper. She'd like sneak me into the show. She'd buy a ticket and she'd kind of like sidestep the security to get me into the show because I was way too young to be there and there was an age restriction and stuff. But he was like my absolute hero. And I think I was the only kid in the class that didn't say a sports star as their hero.
Skulk, I love hearing that because I don't think Casper knows how much of an influence he's had on so many people. I mean, I always explain to people who don't know him or who hate him. They've never seen him.
Yes.
They don't really know much about him. And I try to explain to them, this guy is a genius. He was doing sketch comedy on TV before anyone else in this country.
Yeah.
He perfected it. He won at that game. His comedy is super edgy. He was happily a gay atheist who is Afrikaans and half Dutch. And he embraces all of these things about himself into this weird package. I mean, he looks like he's meant to be a comedian.
Yes.
But the guy is just absolutely brilliant. He really is.
I mean, I'm
so pleased to hear that you felt that way. Did it feel good meeting him one day, the first time you met him?
I mean, we now do like shows together. Yeah. We're doing the show this year called Skalky and Cassio Concert, what we're going to do like at the Fiesta and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've actually, like, when we've had a quiet moment together, tried sort of explaining like that he was sort of basically I don't think without Casper de Vries I would be a comedian today. That's where my real love and obsession for comedy started. But then, you know, he's also kind of like a shy, he's actually a very shy
it's
guy.
It's hard to get him to be serious about things because I don't know that he knows how to take those kinds of compliments.
Yeah, and then he kind of will sort of change the subject when I start talking
he'll start
in that direction.
Or
yeah, and but I think he hopefully knows. But, now I just love hanging out with him, you know, and, like, invite him for dinner and...
He's a very bizarre human being, though. I mean, he's very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I love him, too. I really do. He's absolutely one of my favorite people. But
yes,
a lot of people who don't know him make such awful character assassinations of the guy. I don't know where... He's harmless. He doesn't hurt people.
He's actually...
He loves his dog... I mean, the guy is so...
He paints.
He's a tremendously sensitive soul.
Yes.
And I don't understand why so many people hate him. I really don't. It bothers me.
Yeah, I think it was like the big Twitter war we had going on, and people just don't.
No, it was before that. You had people saying, "I die feast like a Casper de Vries."
Yeah, but it wasn't on the level that it is now. But I mean, we also live in a society, and you can see it now with all the celebs that are with the scandals coming out. There's like we'll never forgive. Kind of mentality about it, you know, and I often think like, I can't imagine what I would possibly do wrong, you know, like I'm not a racist, I'm not a misogynist, so I can't imagine what kind of scandal I would have. But let's say, argument's sake, I did a scandal, I did something bad.
Let's say you tell a joke one day and then you offend the whole trans community, but you didn't, that wasn't why you told the joke.
Yeah, or I make a joke about a tragedy that happened and it was too soon or whatever, you know, and it becomes like national news. You know, I wouldn't mind being reprimanded for a bad joke, but you know, I would really hope that my fans would eventually forgive me and say, okay, you've had your time out, you know, we've like written you all for 6 months, but it's fine. You've learned your lesson, now you can come back. But there's no that like you can come back now kind of thing.
It's unforgiving.
It's like this thing of, okay, you've messed up, you've made a mistake, like all of us have.
Sure.
But no, you can never have a career again. Kevin Spacey, you are not allowed ever again to make a movie.
Yeah.
Louis C.K., you are not allowed to
tell
put
a joke
your foot
again.
On your stage ever again, on a stage ever again. And I know there are certain things like I don't think we should allow Bill Cosby to ever do a comedy special again. So I also draw the line somewhere.
He's kind of, I think he's the world's biggest serial rapist, if you take the number of victims.
Yeah, could be.
Like he's actually a pretty fucking evil man.
Yeah, so
really
I do also have my personal boundaries. So I would go, okay, cool. Sure. If he now brings out like a revival of the Cosby Show, maybe we then all mustn't watch it. But
I think everyone would, just to see what happens.
Yeah,
like how everyone stays at least an arm's length away from him.
Well, if that happens, I want a cut from that. Sure. Those ratings will actually be through the roof if you think about it.
But yeah, look, I mean, you're having fun, right? You're enjoying it. You love what you do.
I love what I do. And like you said, I'm busy. There's like people, and I'm not just talking about comedians, just like performers, industry, freelance people who they're very busy for a month and then they just got no work for a week or two. And I'm very fortunate to be able to say, you know, I'm busy.
You're busy. And this Durban one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm keen to see you and Cassie Ho concert. I think that sounds like fun.
That's going to be fun.
You're going to be at the Kings and Queens of Comedy at the Durban ICC February 16th. He's not here for his health. He's here to tell us about the show. The one and only Skulk Poseidon Note book now. You need to go and get that. Durban, please don't be
Durban.
The
please
slackers.
Don't be Durban.
Yeah, the slackers and the flaky individuals that you are. CliffCentral.com